Blog Talk Radio.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard to live it, but I'm afraid to die. I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. I go to the movie and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. Then I go to my brother. Say, brother, help me please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Lord, there have been times that I thought I could last for long. But I know a change gon' come. Oh, yes it will.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another segment of Let's Talk Forum. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Thank you for joining us for what should be another great show. A reminder, we do not own the rights to the music you just heard. Also, please click, tag, and share. Tell someone Let's Talk Forum is on the air. And we're about to speak with Patrick Hackett, the author of a new book called What Really Happened in Operation Fishbowl, and Kelvin Spencer, the so-called kingpin, according to Forum PD. This is the man they spent 18 months undercover trying to identify and arrest. Tonight, we will hear his side of what really happened in Operation Fishbowl. With that said, ladies and gentlemen, let's talk forward. I see one of my guests on the line, and for some reason, I'm having trouble identifying the other. If both of my guests would please press 1, and that will allow me to know whose phone line I'm needing to open. I think I have you open, correct. Hi, Patrick. How are you?
How you doing today?
I'm good. For some reason, I'm having trouble finding Kelvin on the line. If Kelvin would press 1, that will allow me to know that I'm supposed to open his phone line. Well, good evening, and thank you for joining us tonight. There's a lot going on. I see Kelvin now. Good evening, Kelvin. How are you?
I'm blessed. How you doing?
I'm good. I said thank you both for joining me tonight, joining us tonight. You know, I know you all, listen, y'all, they only agreed to an hour, so I'm going to have to push these questions real fast. I'm hoping they will extend it a little longer, but they've only promised an hour so far. I'd like to start off by asking you, Patrick, to tell us a little bit about yourself and then what made you need to write this book about Operation Fishbowl.
Well, this I'm a native of Fort Worth. I'm from the south side of Fort Worth. And so the book is a collaboration between Kevin Spencer and myself. It kind of fell in my lap. I had originally written another book, a memoir, with another gentleman from the from our area by the name of Felton, and seemed to kind of get a certain spin in the city, and I just kind of left it at that. And I had already written a book previously before that. And Spencer networking reached out to Felton reached out to me, and it was the instant connection. And we just started lining up the dots, getting the feel of one another, and we began to plan, and we began to move, in a constructive manner.
Gotcha. Good evening, Kelvin.
Can you hear me?
I can. Listen,
you can't hear me?
We can hear you now.
Okay.
Tell us a little bit about growing up here in Fort Worth and how you found yourself involved with gangs and
Well, when I was growing up, it was like the culture that I grew up in. And in the hood, you know, we're growing up in our environment, and you become a product of our environment. And that's what happened with me. I became a product of my environment.
And so did you actually grow up?
I'm getting a lot of wind. I'm getting a lot of wind. I can't hear you that good. I'm getting a lot of wind. Okay. That's better.
Okay.
Okay,
and
that
so,
was your question.
Okay, I didn't get a chance to finish it. And so, did you actually grow up in the fishbowl?
Yes, I grew up in the fishbowl. I'm a native of the fishbowl, should I say.
Okay, so can you tell people what the fishbowl is, what that means?
Well, the fishbowl is the neighborhood I grew up in. The fishbowl is the neighborhood that I grew up in, and the investigation was called Operation Fishbowl. That's not what we call it. We call it the neighborhood. So we're known around town as the neighborhood. But then Tegan Broadwater wrote the fictitious book that he's called an Operation Fishbowl, when he wrote that book, it's like he renamed my neighborhood, and even people from the neighborhood started calling it the fishbowl, which really irks me. I can't really stand that name.
Oh, okay. My mistake then. I thought that was the name of the neighborhood from like way back when, like the people in the neighborhood named it. So you're saying Fort Worth PD undercover officer Tegan Broadwater is the one that named the neighborhood Fishbowl.
That was the name of the investigation. Over the investigation, that was the name of the investigation, Operation Fishbowl. And they named it Operation Fishbowl because if you look on the map, that 6 to 8 block radius, it favors a fishbowl, you know, like a goldfish bowl.
Okay.
It favors that. If you look on the map, that's how it's shaped. So that's the reason for the name, and that was from the authorities.
I tried to post that map today, but it did not print well enough to give you all a clear picture of that. Patrick, I just heard Kelvin say that the other book that was called, what was it called? Operation Fishbowl? What was it? I'm sorry. I don't even know the guy's name. I apologize.
Yeah.
There was another book. We'll just say that. There was another book written about the fishbowl. And that's saying, Kelvin just said it was fictitious. So when you came to the table knowing that, what did you decide the content should contain, knowing the other book was out there?
Well, to be honest, Ms. Hines, to kind of tell you the truth, I was already familiar with the fishbowl. You got to understand, I'm from the south side. And so that you know, even though so my story is the same but different. And so you got to understand that I'm a native of the South Side. And so my mother grew up on the South Side. I grew up on the South Side. And so when you grow up in a community like this, there's names that ring out. And there's a certain way that you have to move, whether if you're a part of the culture of gang banging, you know, narcotic sales or what. There's still a certain way that you have to move. And you hear characters and names. And so to hear the fishbowl and to know what happened, it was not necessarily something new. One of the things that was very imperative and very enlightening about working with Spencer was we begin to just go back. And so we come from a community no more different than Watts, no more different than Detroit, Harlem, where we have generations of African-American men that have been indicted on narcotic sales. And the truth of the matter is not everyone is necessarily guilty. Some are just guilty by association. Some are guilty by their past, and some were guilty. And so I had already read the book. The book is on my shelf. And so what and I'm not going to lie with you. Talking with a family member, I was like, man, the book was like 70% done. And I began to have these thoughts roll through my mind. And I begin to look at some things, and I begin to say, you know what? For so long, we've allowed other people to write the narrative of our culture, of our side of town. There's many positive things that have come from the South, and you know, forever until the day that I die, I am a culture, a member, a life-standing member of it. Even though I've gone on and do other things with my life, so the book I read it. I know people that have been personally involved in it. So I just sat down and it just naturally fell in place. And I just started spending time with Kevin, spending time with his family, meeting his children. And next thing you know, I was like, this is a story we're going to push and we're going to let it fall where it goes.
Wow. You know, and y'all, I'm not going to even mention the name of the other book because we're not promoting it. We're promoting this book tonight. So I guess it's good that I couldn't remember the name. That said, Kelvin, you know, one thing I read in recently was that Officer Broadwater said that he never bought drugs. And that part I found to be, like, incredible, if that be the case, because how could you be in an undercover operation on the street pretending to be a drug dealer like you never touched the drug? So was that part fictitious, maybe?
That part is truly fictitious. I didn't hear that. You mentioned that you heard that. I've heard people say that they've heard him say that. He's purchased drugs many a times from numerous of people that's indicted into the investigation. How could he get them? How can he indict him if he's never purchased the drugs?
Right. That's what I didn't understand. Yeah, I heard him say that in a Google it at WFAA interview where they were asking him, well, did you actually have to buy drugs? And he was like, no. And his reason, y'all, and I'm going to paraphrase, but the reason was some kind of way he said that he would always have a setup where somebody else was getting somebody else to buy some drugs or something like that. But to me, that part didn't seem believable, that these guys who he referred to as businessmen would be not on top of their game enough not to catch the fact that he's never actually touching the drugs for an 18-month period.
Yeah, I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm sorry. But don't get me wrong. He did bring smokers, drug addicts to come score from the guys that were serving them, that were selling them drugs. He did bring them by. Times he's met a few of the little homies and bought drugs from them too, and a couple of the guys that ran a couple of houses in the hood and bought drugs direct with him. So he can't. That's a lot.
Okay, that's why I just question. And y'all, listen, I've never been in that scene at all. And Kevin's phone call dropped some kind of way, so hopefully we can get him back on the line. But y'all, that part just really kind of struck me as like that's just like close to impossible to be a white guy who is able to infiltrate a black community where, you know, you got the Crips and there's drug dealing and everything, in some kind of way that person managed to never touch the drugs but still be able to blend. So that, and I don't know, y'all, I'm just saying that part right there was one part on the interview that I just questioned, like, what am I missing here? So I don't know, but that's something that I did catch when he was interviewed on WFAA. For some reason, Patrick, we seem to have lost Kelvin. And if you would call back in and press 1, we'll find you on the board again. But Patrick, so one thing I found in the research was the fishbowl has one way in, one way out. And allegedly there were men posted up always protecting the perimeters of these entrances and exits so that police could not just do a surprise raid because it was very well protected, almost like, you know, the police knew that this wasn't like something that was going to be easily done, and that was the purpose of them having to do Operation Fishbowl. Is that correct?
So it's like this, and it's a lot of things that we intentionally kept out of the book. And what we wanted to do was Kevin trusted me enough to say, hey, this is a story. And so when you walk through the book, Ms. Hines, what you'll see is, and you'll see, I wanted to come from a different spin. And me and Kevin will collaborate on this. But let me first answer your question. You got to understand it was like a loose pocket. You had different individuals, and I'm not going to go into the full gamut of the story, but what we tried to do was focus on Kevin and what he had. And one of the chapters of the book specifically speaks about, you know, just kind of how he had his house set up and, you know, and different things like that and how he ran his operation. And so in the book, see us walking from chapter one, how did Kevin get into this? The grooming, the lifestyle, and how a young man that is growing up in the inner city actually was involved and was good at sports. But the fast life, had an older brother that was murdered by the Fort Worth Police Department, unfortunately. These things, you know, these tragic experiences in our lives have a tendency to shift our path. And there was a time when in the process of this, he knew where he was going, but let me say this. Kevin grew up in the church. Kevin came from a mother that was, you know, a mother that was loving, but also groomed him and taught him and showed him different things and how to survive. And she wanted these young kids of hers to do this. And so anyway, Kevin, being like any other young black guy, in America, makes the wrong choices. And sometimes, you know, my grandmother said, my late grandmother always used to say, you know, our actions, our choices can take us a little bit further than what we expected. And I think, you know, you don't grow up one day and say, hey, I want to end up being this individual that's running drugs and is a gang leader. But choices, we have to also put that on ourselves. And then our environment, society, the culture, a lack of opportunities or a failure to accomplish these opportunities brings us to this story. But I think another pivotal point, and I want to be very sensitive on this, is I want the listeners to understand that Kevin and myself, we're not glorifying this. We're telling that this is a story of redemption. This is a story of a man, like many of us, that have made wrong choices and now is a father. I've seen that face to face. I mean, loves his children. I've met some family members and a man that coaches little football. He's a legitimate business owner. And so what we're saying is, like, even in spite of our past, we want to show society in America, even as black men that make choices, take that felon, take that strike, take those strikes off our back and allow us to be who we're called to be and bounce back from our mistakes and allow us those opportunities to move forward.
I agree. I am not sure what happened with Kelvin and why he was dropped from the call. If he would, please call back in and then press 1 so that we can find him on the phone line. I'm not sure what happened with that. But I did talk with him in the pre-interview, and, you know, he was saying that, you know, after he did his time, I think he was sentenced to 15 years, 8 months. He did 12 years of that. And now he's back operating a trucking business, if I remember correctly, and that, you know, he's very excited about being a productive member of society.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, so, yeah, Kevin is, at any point in time, Kevin can be in the state. Kevin can be out of the state. And Kevin has a very unique ability about himself. I begin to find out that the people that I'm connecting with on these books, there's always this one theme, and Kevin theme that he's taught me and that I've held closely to myself. And mind you, just kind of getting a little emotional because you got to understand a lot of people were impacted by this, all right? And so it's home, families, mothers lost their sons, he always taught me, he said, Patrick, you stay ready so you don't have to get ready. And so when you come into characters like Kevin, you have no other choice but to be impacted. And so what we plan to do is we got other things in the loop. And so with Kevin right now, he's just taking a day at a time. He understands the rep that's out there. He understands the, you know, what's going on as far as, you know, just some of the things that have come about. But, yeah, as far as everything, he's a legitimate businessman now. Anytime in the process of us working on this project, I think Kevin, he just sent me a text. He's back on. Kevin, if you're on
tap. Okay, Kevin, your phone line is open.
Yeah, so, you know, he's a football coach in the whole nine. So I think, Kevin, you up?
Yeah, Kevin, can you hear me?
I can hear you guys. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello.
So we were talking about the fact that, you know, you were sentenced to 15 years, 8 months. You did 12 years of that. And now you're back, you know, and I understand for the pre-interview, you have a trucking business. You know, you're coaching Little League football, and you're a productive member of society now.
Yes, I am. I think it's just the glory of God. I'm a business owner of my own trucking company. We're not limited over the states. We probably travel 48 of the 51 states, 52 states. Cool. I'm sorry. We go all over, even Alaska sometimes. You know. Mm. So and as far as the football, my football team finished number 2 in the nation. We was the number 2 team in the world, in the United States. So that's our world. So. We was number 2 team in the world. We went and played for the championship in Florida with TNS Cougars. And brother and I, we it's our organization. So we feel like we got to give it back to the community. You know, we have to give back to the community. If not, you know, we're trying to avoid some of the kids from going down the same road that we went down. You know what I'm saying? I had role models. They just wasn't teaching me the right things and to play the right role.
Right. Right, and I get that. And one thing we talked about in the pre-interview too is how your biggest regret is the time that you lost with from your kids.
Oh yeah, that time. Oh man, that's the roughest thing. That's one of the roughest. Not just my kids was the biggest part because I am responsible for them. And what I also heard is the people that you put the time into. Before you got locked up, are we going to be there? Are we going to ride? Are we going to do this? You know, I had a very strong support system, don't get me wrong, but compared to the people that I've taken care of, people that I've nurtured, people that I've helped, you know, those people, it's like they're far and few, you know, but I'm okay with that because, like you said, pre-interview, I was talking to you about being locked up. When you're locked up, and you have all that time to yourself and all that time to think. I believe I told you, Pat. I know I've told Pat. While being locked up for so long, it's like being dead and able to look down and see how people are going to act and how they're going to move in your absence. Mm-hmm. It's like being dead and seeing how people are going to act when you're dead.
Wow.
And it's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's true, and it's like. Then you see the effect on the people. You show me how many people that doesn't seem like they're affected. I'll show you how many people that you affected. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So those that don't show the gratitude and the concerns, you can't. My mother told me, way baby girl, My mother told me a long time ago, I was in the holdover. They had just locked me up. A couple of cats owed me some money. And I say, Mama, you seen so-and-so? Nah, baby, I ain't seen him. I said, all right, he may be busy. Well, Mama, did you see so-and-so? Nah, baby, I ain't seen him. So I was like, ah, dang, Mom. They don't do me like I do them. Mama, I used to take care of them. My mama made a statement that stick with me today. She said, baby. I'm like, yes, ma'am. Right now today, I still say yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, to my mother. So she was like, baby. I said, yes, ma'am. She said, baby, if you expect for people to treat you like you treat or like you treated them, you'll forever be disappointed.
Sure.
And I just sat there, and I let that set with me for a while, and she was true. And so right now, I have no expectation for no one but myself.
I am getting text messages that they want to, some people want to ask questions. Do you all want to take questions from callers or just continue? As
I have no problem. I have no problem.
We can do that.
Okay, listen, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Let's Talk Your Worth. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Our guest has said that they will take calls, so if you would, get on the phone lines at 515-605-9321, then press 1. That's 515-605-9321, then press 1. If you're listening via the Internet, the number's at the top of your screen at the right. So, again, the number is 515-605-9321. Let me ask you a question about the whole 18, 19 months. You know, they say warning comes before destruction. They say that, you know, you don't ever, you know, disregard what your gut's telling you, that your gut always kind of lets you know that something's off. Did you get a feeling, Kevin, that something was not right?
I didn't get a feeling. A couple of my guys told me how much money this man was spending and for what, and for the amount of work or whatever they were, that he was purchasing. And I told, like, one of the guys that's on my case, his name is BB, old friend of mine. You know, we grew up together. We used to go to night school. It's in the book, y'all. Check it out. We was in night school together. So BB come and told me that he spent, I think he just, the guy had just spent like $4,500, maybe $4,500. And then BB told me what he had, what he gave him. Mm-hmm. I was like, man, cuz, this man is a law.
Mm.
He said, Lord, don't bring him around me. I ain't fat boy. I ain't going to bring him around you. Yeah, don't bring him around me. You know, that's the police, man. He ain't no Lord, no fat boy. All right, I'm just telling you what I know. That's just from my experience. And,
wow.
It turned out that I was correct. And I don't want it to get misconstrued. There's a lot of people that look at the book and be like, wow, they let a white boy come down here. They let a white boy come do this. It's not uncommon for white to have white drugs, dope fiends. That's what we do. You're gonna serve the white dope fiends because the white dope fiends are gonna spend the $200 and $300 at a time if you're on the block as a young kid. Even when I was on the kid, when I was young, there were far and few that we had white dope fiends. It was far and few, but we did have some. And when they came through and spent well. So right now, it's a culture. It started out being a cultural drug. It was for the blacks, but that's when all the problems came in when whites started gravitating to that cheap high and got hooked on that cheap high.
And let's go over something, Kelvin, so everybody's clear. You know, from what I'm understanding, there was a section of what he called the fishbowl where there were maybe 30 dealers on that corner at one time, but they were only servicing the customers that they were familiar with. So that said, again, how was he able to infiltrate you all if you all were only dealing with people that you knew?
Because what he would do, he would bring some of the known drug heads, crack smokers. He would get them to bring him and introduce, open the door for him, let him in, and then he would gain a rapport with these guys that started serving him, that started selling him the drugs. Once he gained the rapport with them, then he no longer needed the drug heads to bring him by to score anymore because they know him now.
Okay. And you know, and this is another thing that I found. And y'all, listen, I have not read the other person's book, but I'm just telling you the little bit I've done in research, and that was about 5 hours worth of research to come to tonight's show. But one thing he said that kind of struck me is like, really? He said that basically he went by the fictitious name P, and that basically he was a Christian person, never, you know, used curse words, you know, 220-pound white boy with reddish blonde hair. And, you know, it just seemed to me odd that, you know, someone would be able to be around, you know, Crips and, you know, real bad dudes, you know, on the street, well, that's the best way I can refer to, you know, bad dudes, because it seems like the Crips, y'all were bad. I mean, people were fearful of you all, or so he says in the book, the neighborhood was. Let's address that. He said that people were afraid, and they were basically held hostage in their homes in that area at that time. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, no, I totally disagree with that as well. There wasn't no one held hostage. Most of the people that lived in the fishbowl before, most of the people that lived in my neighborhood before the indictment or what have you, they probably still stay down there. And they're older people, and they're people that we took care of, that we looked out for. There wasn't any hot crime. If it was hot crime, it was people calling the police from the loud noise or something. It wasn't a hot crime area because there wasn't any break-ins. We didn't play that. We didn't play the break-ins. We didn't play the disrespecting of older folks. And we made sure the older people, the yards were cut, their bills were paid. We looked out for the people. These people that they said we held hostage were some of the main people that was writing me while I was gone and trying to look out for me and try to send me money, which I declined because I know they needed their money, and I was okay.
Hmm.
These are the same people they said that we held hostage. Not true.
When I really did the research and really, like, got into this story, y'all, I really got into this story. It really kind of, if this was a movie, I would probably say this was New Jack City and you were Nino Brown. You wouldn't go that far?
I wouldn't go as far as to say that, but it wasn't the Nino Brown, it wasn't the takeover aspect, because it's like everybody down there was family, and we would look out for each other there. Now, even the older people would let us know, hey, the police parked up there around there. Y'all, you let Kevin them know the police up there, baby. Yes, ma'am.
Wow.
You understand what I'm saying? So it wasn't, and the violence, it wasn't that. The violence was not as bad as they put that. The violence was worse in the mid-90s when we were really gang-banging and doing stupid stuff. When we were murder capital of the world. Do your research. I think mid-90s, 93 to 95, I think either 2 or 3 years in that decade, we were murder capital of the world.
Hmm.
That's when the indictment should have came out.
So Patrick, are you considering turning the book into a movie?
Well, you know, at this point, what we're at right now is we just want to focus on getting, first off, we want to thank you, Ms. Hines, for allowing us this platform. What we just want to do is get the book out. And we also want to be able to set up a stage in less than a couple of months where we can have a book signing, and we want to get Kevin on the platform so he can get into these schools, right? And so I'm a firm believer everything happens for a reason. And so Kevin's story needs to be DeSoto ISD. Kevin Spencer's story needs to be in a Tulsa, Oklahoma, because you have to understand that we have to utilize the people that have been through certain situations. And with a culture of young African American males that are off track, and that are we have the greatest resources that are available, but as a people we're not focused. And we have a major struggle with a lot of our young black brothers that are killing and caught up on this in genocide. And so what we want to do is get Kevin's story out there. In the process of it, we want to be able to just tell the story from another aspect. And like I said, and then also businessmen. And so what we want to do is say, listen, we want to conduct some things, and we want to be able to create some avenues and build some platforms and get our story out there. And over the last few days, I've just kind of been sitting back and thinking, I'm at a point, I'm 40 years old, and so I glean a lot from what my elders, my mother, my father, what some of my elders that have passed on that have told me. And so at this point, I'm not really, you know, I'm really not waiting on anybody to write this script. We're going to write our own script. We're going to write our own story. And nobody can tell the story about the South Side like we can tell it. Kevin can tell it from one perspective. I can tell it, you know, I'm looking for platforms where people can bring me in. A young brother coming from the same neighborhood, another side from the Morningside section, and by the great, you know, I had to learn how to navigate the game. You know, I'm growing up with two doors down or across the street or on the next block. I got friends that are incarcerated. You know, I got friends of mine that have become victims to gun violence, you know, and it's a part of the story of the young inner city young black males. And so what we want to do is we don't want to glorify this thing, but we want to just kind of – we want to take the narrative in our own hand and say, listen, mm-hmm. this is what we can do differently. And it starts with telling our own story, Ms. Hines.
Gotcha. You know, Kelvin, one thing that we talked about was – and I'm going to the phone lines next. Kelvin, one thing you told me that this had something to do with politics possibly downtown and real estate and development and that type of thing, and that's why you feel like maybe you told me in the downtown.
Yes, it what started off was the money, the Alpha grants, mm-hmm. the Alpha grants to the government to clean up that area. So they want to mm-hmm. clean up that area so they can put the Walmart that's up there, so they can put the Hibbers food store, so they can put the Marshalls, whatever's up there on that Barry and Mitchell, right there with mm-hmm. the five or six the Wingstops, the whole shopping center, the whole little shopping center. Investors came in and they donated money to clean it up. So they started cleaning it up, and they named the operation Safe City. So clean up all the bad guys, get all the crime-ridden people out the way, so we can open up this, so we can have a product that will sell and make money for the investors. So what they did, go ahead, Pat.
Hey, Kevin, let me tap this in. And Ms. Hines, if you culturally. And throughout American society, what Kevin noticed is something that we were just bouncing these pieces together and just young black men just kind of talking our stories and our experiences. If you notice, in most urban American cities, whenever mm-hmm. there is a major infrastructure of real estate development, they always mm-hmm. do a clean. They always do a sweep. They always do a cleanup. Mm. Have you noticed that? I can take you to Los Angeles, Inglewood. We can go to any major inner city area. And whenever mm-hmm. it's almost really you can call it attack upon the culture. So whenever these things whenever certain things happen, there's always a deliberate and a strategic attack. And Kevin, like I was telling you earlier, we're not saying that across the gamut everything was innocent, but we are saying thing is deeper. Yeah, what we're saying is this thing is deeper than just some young black guys gangbanging and selling dope. There's some powers that be that are also able to benefit from these things as well, man.
You better believe it.
All right, y'all, let's go to the phone lines. We're going to 817-378. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth. 817-378. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Good evening, brother comrades. I'm Brother Malik, Black Power, one of the commanders of United Guerrilla Warriors, part of a black militia. I came through that area, but I want Sister Hines.
Thank you for your services, brother.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
I'm first cousin Crip T. So, Brother Crip Smith, I know what you – yeah.
Which Crip T?
Jim Davis. They ain't number one Crip T.
That's my guy. No, it's not one Crip T. It's a few Crip T.
I mean,
Tim, my guy, no, that's my six. Family.
Yeah, rolling six Crip T. Sister Hines, be cognitive when you put these brothers' names up on that board that you got on there.
Okay.
You're releasing their personal information.
Okay.
That's a practice that you need not to put their names of whomever that you have on the platform. I'm glad that y'all are telling the narrative because there's a whole bunch of narratives that have been going around, Brother Spencer, that I'm not liking that I've heard. when they did that murder work thing. So I'm glad that you and brother Patrick are getting some things clear. But I'm asking also that y'all, we are reliving the early 90s that you're talking about. So we all going to have to collectively do something.
One more time. You said about the early 90s. What? I'm sorry.
I said seem like we're getting back to that, brother.
Okay.
What did you?
Good point.
I witnessed two murders, four murders, man, every day. And I think we all need to work, do our part to try to come together to not relive that situation.
I agree. That's why I'm on that, especially with my younger guys that's on the south side. I'm on that, and I'm aware of what you're saying because the killing is senseless and it's out of control right now. But I totally agree with you. And as it's funny that you mentioned that because that's what I'm on and in the process of doing right now.
Because is any way possible, Brother Spencer, that you can get my number so we can meet? Because what they doing with my group, they sending word back to us that they don't have no issues with us. So when we hit the ground, they kind of like duck off. But once we leave, it cranks back up. So I'm trying to get a meeting in between that to where we have one plan and one agenda to hold all this.
Okay. Well, one thing for sure, we want to try to halt it and knock it down. We'll probably never be able to halt it all. But if we can stay one here
about.
And one there, we're doing our part. So I'm with that. Whenever I'm on Facebook, you can inbox me your number. I'll send you mine.
Okay, I appreciate
I'm on Facebook,
it. I appreciate
just
it.
Yeah, we'll work towards that. That's.
Thank you.
I appreciate it, brother. All right,
brother. You have a blessed day.
You too.
Hey man, take it easy.
All right, y'all. We're going to 817-446. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk About Words.
Carrie, have you got me? It's 446.
Yep.
Is that
we
me?
Got you. Yes, you.
Okay. I want to thank you guests for being on tonight and sharing that with us, what they're doing tonight. And what I really want to quickly say real quick is I know you have a book. You're promoting it. Maybe before you get off, if you have someplace where people can get the book or purchase a book, or how would they go about getting a copy of the book? That would be something you might want
to
throw in before you get off this before you get off of here, okay? I just want to throw that
in.
Thank you for coming on the show.
Tell them now, y'all.
Go ahead, Pat. We haven't released it yet. We're working on 2 days.
Pat and I get
with each other. But real soon, though, within the next couple of months, real soon.
Yeah, good question. The book is already complete. Kevin got a few copies. I got a few copies just for a few people to kind of look at. The book is already done. And everything of that nature. And what we're just trying to do is just, you know, trying to get the word out right now. And then if you follow us, we're in the process of, building some things or whatever, but really trying to figure out that right date of when we plan to drop it, maybe 6 weeks, maybe 5 weeks, you know, could be in 3 weeks. But we're just trying to really get the word out there. And like I said, Kevin Spencer's on Facebook. I'm on Facebook as well. Patrick Hackett. Follow us. I decided to kind of make my stuff public, and when you see it, we'll be letting everything go as far. You'll be able to access ebooks. You'll be able to access original copies, and then in the process of creating a few stops along the way for you to come do a meet and greet as well.
For some reason, I don't know what's going on. Kevin got dropped again, but maybe you can call back and we'll get you back on. You know, another thing that I noticed about this, and maybe this is the question I should pose to Kelvin, is that some people got life and then other people got much lighter sentences. So why did one person get life? Was it something different than gangbanging and drug use, or why did they get peace back on? Kelvin, I'll post that question to you. Why did one person get life and some other people got much lighter sentences? Life is a long time.
Oh, the guy, yeah, life is forever. Life is forever. He got life. The reason he got life was because he took it to trial. He took it to trial. And when he took it to trial, you had people got up on stand and testified and said what the people had said was true, when some of it was and some of it wasn't.
Whoa.
But they put career criminals up there to testify against guys and allow their statements to be credible, which is done nowhere but in the federal judicial system.
So you decided not to go to trial.
Exactly.
Right. And so then you were off for 15 years, 8 months. And so why did you decide
I decided not to go to trial because I had 33 people that wrote statements on me.
Yes.
And that was willing to get up and testify in court. And my lawyer told me if I would have went to trial, they would have paraded all 32 of those guys in and hearing the same thing that they were saying, a repetition, saying, yeah, he did this, yeah, he did that. 99.9 times out of 100, they come back with a guilty verdict. And that would have put me on, I would have got life across the board.
So you knew these people? You actually knew these people?
The people that wrote statements on me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew some of them. I knew some of the guys that wrote statements on me, but some of the guys that wrote statements on me, I never met a day in my life. There were some guys that were already locked up.
Wow, that's that system for you, y'all. Wow. That's what I was wondering. When you say 32, that's a lot of people. You know, so some of the people, you never even you knew the people.
No, I never even knew the people. It was 51 people in the indictment.
Yeah, that's crazy. I'm just saying that part right there just like blows my mind. But I understand the system and how it works. But I just questioned too when you said that, like, wow, did he know all those people? Because I know sometimes I've heard stories about they'll get jailhouse snitches that come out of nowhere and say that you said this to them or you said that to them or they knew you on the street or this, that, or the other. So it was situations like that?
No, it was situations like, The people that was building a case for me. They had me locked up for a drug sale that I supposed to had sold some drugs on April 6, 2005. I was supposed to have took some drugs to a friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
But on 2005 or 6, whatever the date is, I'm not for sure what it was. I was at the Zab Judah and Floyd Mayweather fight. So I brought them all the contents showing that I was at the fight. Once I brought them all the contents, all the receipts of rental car receipts, hotel footage of me in the casino. You know, we went to the stint. My lawyer got all that, and once we presented that, that changed the narrative because they started interviewing everybody that was involved in the case and everybody that knew Kevin Spencer was. They started interviewing them, and they built my case, my indictment. They gave me a superseding indictment. Conspiracy to possess and distribute more than 50 grams of cocaine-based crack cocaine. And then once they interviewed the people and the people gave them their stories and their spiel, you know, to get time off of their sentence, you know what I'm saying? Someone was already locked up. Someone was going into getting locked up, so... Once they did that, then they collaborated that and built the case. That was my case. My case is based off nothing but statements from co-conspirators, unindicted co-conspirators, and secret informants.
Wow. You know, y'all, this happened over what we understand to be an 18 to 24-month period. This is between 2003 and 2004. And we understand on May 17, 2006 is when all the arrests took place, or most of the arrests took place. And I understand you were not in the city at the time of the arrest,
I was in the city, but I wasn't at my house when they came to my house.
Oh, wow.
But I was in the city, yes.
Wow. So how did you end up getting arrested?
Well, I turned myself in, probably one of the dumbest things I could ever do. I turned myself in. And when I turned myself in, I seen the fictitious indictment, and I went to fight in the fictitious indictment. Once I fought that and saw that they was incorrect, they They dropped that indictment, and well, they didn't drop it. They superseded it and added the charges from the statements that the guys made.
Now, you said turning yourself in was one of the stupidest things you ever did. Why do you say that?
Dumbest. Dumbest. I say that because my purpose for turning myself in was because I didn't have a record. And I said, if I turn myself in, I don't have a record. You know what I'm saying? See what they have me with. They should give me a bond. But me not knowing, me being ignorant and unintelligent towards the system, not knowing that once these people want you off the street, they're going to get you off the street. And if they don't want to give you no bond, all they got to do is say they don't want to give you no bond. And that can influence them not to give you a bond.
Wow.
And that's what happened.
I'm sorry, did you say something, Patrick?
No, you cut out a little bit.
Oh, no, I was just listening.
Okay. One thing you said in the pre-interview that I found interesting, you said this all came about because of greed. Can you explain that part?
Yes, greed. Not just greed on my behalf,
mm-hmm.
but greed on my behalf.
Mm-hmm.
At this point when we was hustling, I had probably anything. I had anything that I wanted. I had three businesses. I had a beauty shop, detail shop, a barber shop, and I could have sat out. I didn't have to hustle no more. But me trying to look out for the little homies and me getting addicted because I was addicted to their lifestyle. Me being addicted to their lifestyle, I had the money became like the drugs that I was selling, an addiction.
Let me say this. At the height of it all, let's just say when you knew this was the best money you had ever made in your life, in the back of your mind, was it never the thought that this is going to come to an end at some point?
I figured it would come to an end. I really did. I had dreams and premonitions, you know, things
hey,
happening.
Kim.
So, yes.
Yeah.
Hey, Kim. Hey, tell me times and listeners about that chapter in the book in regards to all alone with the dreams and like.
Oh,
like
yeah. We got a couple of chapters in the book that touches on this. Did I feel them coming? Did I see them coming? Did I know they was coming? So it's you know, I haven't had number one old head to get out of the game without doing any jail time and. Without doing any jail time or anything, alive and well. And right now, he and I has a truck. He has a trucking company also, so that's a blessing. And that guy was my mentor. He really taught me a lot of things that I know now today.
Really, because you know in that other book, we ain't telling nobody tonight. In that other book, I understand that they say at the height of it. Basically, you were moving like 250K a week, and you had like a 55% markup. And y'all, he can talk because he did his time and he all paper. So like you know, you can't get
yeah,
the right.
Yeah, yeah. There's no. The statute of limitation is over. I don't do anything illegal, no more.
Okay.
So at the height of when everything was going on, we were probably making a couple hundred grand a week. That's me, not including what the little homies making and what the guys making at the house down the street or the other house around the corner. That was just me personally.
Wow, I'm sure that can be addictive. I'm just saying that's
very
crazy.
Much so.
Wow,
the lifestyle is addictive. You want something, you get it. You ask for something, people cater to you, you know. And I find now that I've grown up, I find it uncomfortable. You know, when I come go somewhere, sometimes it's like, you know, they cater to me, and I just want to be normal. I'm not. That ain't what it's about no more. I want to be the best father I can be, the best grandfather I can be.
Wow.
No, it's not about that no more. But at one point of time, it was about that.
Wow.
Stop it, Mama.
Is what?
No, I was talking to my daughter. I got my daughter with me.
I understand that a lot of the people that went to jail are out by now. So, and then I heard that
most of them are out by now, yeah.
Most of them are out.
Most of them
And I heard there was a lot of threats made after this whole thing you know, bust wide open. And so one of the people that was involved got stabbed in jail.
Oh, yeah. Jail is a lot of people. A lot of cats that got that did time, they got they went to camps, to the low security, to the medium security. My, it was my first time I've ever been locked up. I didn't even have a record, and they sent me to the maximum security penitentiary, a USP. So I frequented the USP, and it was a lot of violence, of violence in the USP.
Really? And so I'm sure when you got there, everybody already knew who you are.
Yeah. When I got there, my name in the case had already beat me there. So once I got there, I had to make the adjustments that I needed to make. And once I did, it was like, you know, you drop me off in the jungle. You know, my survival mode and my survival tactic is going to kick in. And that's what happened.
Wow. You know, another thing I read, y'all, in my research was that information gathered for the federal prosecution during the 19-month period resulted in 9 cold case homicides being investigated and some being prosecuted in state courts.
Yeah, that's correct.
Whoa. So once when people start talking, they start talking about everything and everything and anything.
Yes, once the dominoes and they start putting them football numbers in front of them, you're facing 20 years because you have a prior drug conviction, and then the people they're going to give up anything, but then that was just the senseless killings anyway. So most people. You know, most people put that in their back pocket and played that card when it was the best time to play it.
Wow, y'all, this is an unbelievable story. But they say it happened. I mean, it's just unbelievable right here in little small town Fort Worth that this would be like something that could possibly have been going on. But y'all say it happened. That's just, I mean, I think it's gonna make a wonderful movie when y'all get to the end. I really do. I think it's gonna make. Really, a great, great movie. I say Will Smith, even though he's in trouble, would make a great character on there. Listen, do y'all have to cut out at an hour, or can y'all give us a little bit more time?
What you got, Kev?
Yeah.
I got a couple more minutes.
Okay, well, we just want to ask a couple more questions. And so the thing is, this whole sting operation and how it went down, at any point, do you feel like you owe the community something when you return? Do you feel like you owe them something still for how everything happened?
I believe I owe not just the community. I owe it to the commitment that I made to God while I was gone. You know, I owe it to the kids coming up before me. I owe it to the white kids that's looking on at where they want to be part of the judicial system. I want to show them, oh, this is what we're experiencing. Now, if this is what you want to do, please go in there and make a change. Don't just go in there and keep up the same riffraff that's going on now. I want to be an example, not just to society, but to everybody and to my mom. I want to make moms proud. Moms, that's my heart. I got to make sure she's all right.
So do you believe if this had been a group of white men that the sentences would have been much different?
Oh, that's a proven fact. White. If you're white and you catch the same kind of cases that blacks catch, you're gonna get more time as a black, not a white. That's a proven fact. You can look at it. It's in the papers every day when a white guy have a manslaughter and a black guy have a manslaughter, they get a white guy 10 years probation, get the black guy 20-something years. It's a known fact.
You know, one thing that struck odd to me is that, and I'm not downplaying his ability to have infiltrated you all and done some, you know, incredible work in 18 months, but I question if he was simply able to do it by himself. I find that part a stretch, and I don't know why I don't believe that one person could have done that. Do you question that at some point that maybe there were some other undercover officers and that it wasn't just one officer?
No, it was one officer. I never questioned the fact there was one officer. But he had little sergeants and lieutenants acting and posing as drug dealers or drug fiends. He would bring that's the way he got in. He would befriend drug addicts at their weakest position, which is really entrapment and all of that, if you want to get technical about the law. He would befriend them and have them selling, going to get drugs with him, introducing them to other drug dealers, so on and so forth.
So in your belief system, you believe one man masterminded this whole thing and was able to go in 18 months, never be discovered. And y'all, listen, I don't know, maybe the story is just incredible to me, because I think the one story that I said, wow, he said he went into a shotgun house to do a drug deal, and drugs were there, guns were there, and he said the TV was on, and it had an episode of Cops on, and this particular episode of Cops, he was on that episode as an officer here in Fort Worth, and he said that he was able to move in front of the TV to change, you know,
to block
the focus off.
To block
yeah.
it, take their focus but, off of it, yeah. I think that was his inner author kicking in there. He's using his imagination. I don't believe that happened.
You know,
but,
so
but
you don't believe that actually yeah. happened?
I don't think that actually happened with the...
Now...
Now
watch this. Hey, now Kel, we're gonna tell them just a little snippet real quick, and they're gonna have to, once we release it, they're gonna have to grab the book. Now, Kel, if you remember, there's a snippet in the Kevin Spencer story where that same particular undercover officer goes to your house, and he asks for who, Kel?
Oh yeah, you're talking about when no, he brought the young guy to the crib. He brought the young guy. Yeah, he brought the young guy to the crib, asking, "Hey man, where Kevin Spencer? I need to go. I need to get whoop to whoop, Kevin." But he's sitting up talking to me. You know what I'm saying? So that was one of the guys that wasn't indicted in Operation Fishbowl.
Oh wow.
Yeah,
oh wow.
So
this guy knew you well enough to come to your physical address, like your home address, or the address where you operated out of?
No, the address in the hood. I had like four or five houses in the hood. He came to one of the houses in the hood that I was at. The guy didn't know, but it wasn't a secret that Kevin's supposed to stay in the house on Bellzine. That's his house on Bellzine. I mean, really, in actuality, I had three or four houses all around the hood.
Gotcha. So this guy that you knew came to the house and tells you, who is like really high up, that he wants to buy something from you.
Yeah, I knew of him as a clucker from Polly. I didn't know him personally. He didn't know me personally. That's why he's asking for me to me. He doesn't know that he's talking to me. He's trying to buy drugs from Kevin Spencer, but he don't know that he's talking to Kevin Spencer at the same time.
Gotcha. Now I get it. Okay, so what did you say to him?
I pride myself on being intelligent, so I know if I smashed him, if something happened right there, if we caused him any harm, that the attempt by was going to turn into something else bigger, and we would have to answer for it. So I say, I asked him, what did he say he wanted? And he said, I'm looking for Kevin Spencer. I want to buy a quarter ounce, an ounce. I forget what it was. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for Kevin Spencer. I want to buy that. I say, you know Kevin? He like, yeah, I scope for him all the time. And it's just me looking at him, and then a couple of homeboys looking at him. So I like grabbed him and roughed him up a little bit, and asking him to leave.
Wow.
We asked him to leave, so he left.
Wow. Yo.
Broadwater never sent anyone else after that pass. He never sent anyone else over there.
Wow. this book, everybody's got to go get the book. Honest to God, everybody's got to go get the book.
Yeah, y'all got to go get that book, man. It's going to be massive. Yeah. Pat's a genius, man. Pat's a genius. I take my hat off to Pat, man. He's a genius. And I appreciate him. I want to let you know I appreciate you, man, for encouraging me to do the project, man, because if you hadn't been pushing me and calling me, and man, you know, I'd have been stagnant.
But you, wow. And you know what? And while we're on the platform, man, listen, I want to appreciate you, Ms. Hines, for giving us this platform, but also Kev just entrusting me with this story for us to put out and go from there. And then just real quickly, Ms. Hines, like in the process of this, I think Kevin was able to come to a place of healing and a clarity concerning some things, and I was mm-hmm. able to find out, hey, you know what? This is what I think a part of my gift toward the world is. I'm a writer. And so, you know, if anybody wants to, you know, link up with me in the future after we get this project, because this project is going to go nationwide, then, you know, mm-hmm. I'm available. I can send this information to you, Ms. Hines. We can post it and we can go from there. I'm looking for stories to write.
Absolutely.
We got another project. Not to cut you off. I'm sorry, Ms. Hines. I didn't mean to cut you off. We have another project that's coming up. My brother, he has a book he's going to write pertaining to us growing up and starting to coach Pee Wee football and things like that. It's called From Boys to Men. So I'm gonna get Pat to headline that and spearhead that project because it's gonna be epic. Because he's like one of the better Pee Wee coaches, you know, around the area. He's known all over. So it's gonna be real good, y'all.
Wow. Listen, and I got to apologize to my co-host because I have absolutely hogged a whole conversation tonight. I'm sorry, Adrian. Please step in, Adrian, and at least get something off these guys tonight. I apologize, y'all. I forgot I had a co-host on the line. Adrian, what do you have for these guys tonight?
Hey, Carrie, it's all good. Hey, Mr. Hackett and Mr. Spencer, thank you, brothers, for coming on. Looking forward to this release. Glad you all were able to. Well, Mr. Spencer, I say, hey, not just you. I mean, you're the only one that's here that was that's on this platform that was a part of the operation. But thankfully, you were able to survive it, you know, because we don't lose so many brothers to the system and to the streets, you know. So thankful you were able to, you know, make a, you know, turn around and, you know, at least be able to have some sense of your life, you know, after everything that transpired. I think the only question I would have with you brothers, considering that the book is completed and is due to be released, has there been any kickback on it from anybody that's been a part of the operation, you know, during that time and who's maybe still doing time or who's completed the time? Has there been any kickback, you know, as far as him telling the story as if he's not the only one that was a part of this? Why is he telling the story? You know, X, Y, Z. Has there been any kickback or everybody pretty much in support of it? Or are people looking to say, hey, what do we stand to benefit from it if you're going to tell his story because it's just not your story? Could you all speak to that aspect?
Sure. That's why we were really careful not to add any names of people that we thought would be offended or would want to bring up legal aspects or what have you. But as far as the kickback, we've been getting like a lot of positive feedback, and it's just to tell a story of how it went. They allowed this Caucasian to come in my neighborhood, rename my neighborhood to the Fishbowl, and tell a story about my neighborhood that we have older folks in hostage, in bondage. They're scared to do this. They're scared to do that because they're so quote-unquote violent. That's totally untrue. If you do your research, it was not even just Crips that got locked up. It was most of the guys that got locked up wasn't even gang members. Mm-hmm. But they made that out of a gang thing for the profit and mm-hmm. for the sales and for the building. But with the kickback thing, I'm a firm believer in God, and I'm a man's man. So whatever I say, whatever I do, I'm gonna stand on that. And whatever happens, you know, you're gonna have to live that. Whatever happens, you know what I'm saying? I'm so respectful. I'll never be disrespectful. So I'm gonna demand that amount of respect from everybody, you know, because I'm gonna give it to everybody.
Yeah. And
just to kind of as far as the kickback, that's my least worry, because you know I know what I'm going to do. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to be me. So whatever mm-hmm. happens, you know what I'm saying? That's what it is.
Yeah. And just to kind of double back on what Kevin just said, you know, it's the Kevin Spencer story, right? And so in the process of writing, you know, it's like this. This is what I found out. Everybody has a story, right? And I believe everybody, we can learn from everybody's story. And I found out through writing this book and the previous book that I did, and I'm believing that, you know, and I'm believing that God is going to open up this space for me and that I'm going to write. And one day that's going to be my avenue. Everybody has stories, and if we're willing to listen, it's the good, the bad, and the ugly. But if you look deep enough, you can see a story of transformation and a story of redemption, right? And so as one of the brothers made a mention earlier, that is true. In the year 2021 in Fort Worth, Texas, we had one of the highest homicide rates in the city, which paralleled or connected to back to the 90s. So we have an epidemic. And the thing is, the victims are getting younger. They're 13, they're 14, they're 16, 17. We just had this situation with a young guy that was on his way, and killed at a prom. And so what we're doing is saying, listen, it is possible. And in our prayer and for this book is that some grandmothers, some educators, some principals, so the big mama on the porch down in Winona, Texas, or down in Clarksville, Mississippi, they can get this book and say, son, listen, this is what's going to happen if you go this way. But yet that this story of Kevin is also a story of grace and how God was warning him, but yet he can still change the situation around, and we're moving forward. And what we want to do is see where this can go from here.
Wow. Y'all, thank you so much for stopping by tonight. I hope everybody got to hear the other side of what happened in Operation Fishbowl. But as Kevin said, Fishbowl is a name that was given to a neighborhood. But to you, it
Come
was
on.
Actually your neighborhood. It's not. It's not Fishbowl to you. It's not Fishbowl to him. That's his neighborhood. So, wow. Thank y'all so much for coming through. Are there any final comments that you all want to make before leaving tonight?
I just want to thank you, Ms. Hines, for your platform. I thank your co-host, and I thank Pat, man. We're going to try to make something big out of this. And it's not just for – we're not looking for monetary gain. We're looking for not gaining knowledge and instilling knowledge in our younger generation, because this killing has to stop. Senseless killing has to stop. And it starts with us.
I agree.
And so, you know, just a final word. We thank you, Ms. Hines, and your co-host for allowing us to, you know, step on your platform. Maybe, you know, before we launch this book and get everything settled, we can come on one more time and lunch back out there. But just basically, it's a story, and really it's a story of two young black men from different parts of the South Side come together to say, hey, let's move forward and let's see what we can do to make this thing a little bit more better. For the next generation. And, you know, one day once we leave this earth, somebody will pick up this book and say, you know, who is this Patrick? You know, who's Kevin? What was the stories? And you know, with us being from the South Side, there's a certain amount of pride. And so we just want to write our story about our neighborhood and leave it in the hands of those that have walked and lived it. All right?
Is there a website or email?
Hello?
Is there a website or email?
Yeah, you can take
website,
this
email
yes. down. Yeah, we're going to give you this email. Just take we're going to give you an email. Hack it. It can be HACKETT, and it's Kemp, KEMP, 22@gmail.com. You can any inquiries, maybe anybody with the press, possible any other interviews, and then also any speaking engagements for Kevin or myself or to come as a duo, we're available for that as well.
Okay, say the email again, this time a little slower.
Okay, HACKETTKEMP 22@gmail.com.
All right. Y'all, listen, that was Kelvin Spencer and Patrick Hackett. Thank y'all, guys, listening. I hope you much success with this project.
Thank you all very much.
Okay,
stop by anytime.
I will be blessed.
Anyway, good night, y'all. This is y'all. That was the book that we all can't wait to read. Listen, we're talking about what really happened in the fishbowl. That's what's going on, Adrian. What really happened in the fishbowl? We got the other side of the story tonight, y'all. Thank them so much.
Hey, Carrie, like they say in life, it's two sides to every story. So, hey, there you go.
That's right. And listen, and you know, and I was almost about to promote the other book, but that would be insane. So I'm glad I couldn't even remember the name of it because that was not the purpose of them stopping by for me to promote the other book. So I'm glad I did not do that. And listen, y'all, that project is going to be off the chain when it hits the shelves. I can tell that now. I mean, it sounds like a lot of stuff went down in that neighborhood because Kelvin made it very clear that was not a neighborhood name that they gave themselves. That was a name that the officer gave to that neighborhood. So we're moving on, y'all. Listen, we're going to talk about some hot topics tonight in the remainder of the time we have. What we found out today, we understand that according to a very reliable source in the Tatiana Jefferson case, we understand that Fort Worth officer or former Fort Worth officer Aaron Dean, attorney, is asking for a delay in the trial. I mean, really, y'all, really, that's really getting old. But I'm understanding he's asking for a delay. So I don't even know what to think about that thing anymore. I mean, this case or the shooting took place October 12th, 2019, and we're still waiting on the trial. I don't know what to think about that. What do you think? I mean, what else can you possibly need to do? You got six attorneys. I mean, how many people get six attorneys? This guy has six attorneys, and you know, all types of resources, obviously, because who can afford six attorneys? And so I'm just trying to figure out, like, what else could they be, like, needing a delay for? Is it making sense at this point? Is it me? It's not making sense to me.
No, it's not making sense. It seems to me something they're trying to get some certain pieces in place, certain people in position. I mean, we can't afford to hold off any longer. Are they trying to get certain people possibly? Do we have any judges to be elected or anything that's coming up? I mean, I know we have some elections coming out in November, but are there any judges to be elected? Is that, you know, I'm just trying to see. We got to know, find out what court this has been, this trial is happening out of, and see, you know, what does anybody do to be, you know, if that seat is up for. I would say that's where we can start. We can find out what court this will be holding this particular case and see if it's due for, you know, the judge to be, you know, voted out, you know, and somebody else voted in, you know. I don't know. It just sounds crazy.
It's more than crazy. Let me say this, y'all. I used to work for the courts years and years ago, and one thing I do know is that every delay that your attorney gets for you, he wants more money before he gets you another delay. So the question is, who's putting this bill? Oh, yeah. I used to push the dates back when the attorneys would call and say, can you push this date back from this to this, you know, for our next hearing or whatever? We would move the date. But every time he asks you to do that, he is actually getting more money. So who is putting the bill for Aaron Dean to have six attorneys and all of these postponements? And so it really just makes me wonder what the heck is really going on, because is the POA footing the bill? Because otherwise the average person could not afford this at all.
Carrie, I just sent out to get clarity on that question as far as delay of trial. I just sent a question to an attorney, consider him a friend, attorney friend that I'm part of a youth organization with that we do football and we do basketball with. I sent a direct question to him regarding how many delays can an attorney request, a delay in trial can an attorney request. He said there's no set number. How many delays they can request. So
But see, the question is, why is the court allowing the delays? They, you know, an attorney, I mean, he can ask for whatever he wants to. It's just, why is the court granting the delays is the question. You know what I mean? Why?
Yeah, and then you spoke to the money aspect of it. We, like you say, we don't see what's behind the scenes. Like you say, money controls, like you said, money controls everything. So who's behind the scenes not wanting this thing to spill over, because they know this is going to be national. This is – them cameras are going – the national media is going to infringe on Fort Worth as long as their trial goes on. So, like you say, what are they doing to try – why is it such a – you know, it's something going on.
Oh, it's bigger than what we understand, absolutely, because I'm really just paying attention to the fact, you know, listen, attorneys don't come cheap. I mean, and in some cases, you're talking about $500 an hour, depending upon what type of defense they're putting on for you. And so I'm just trying to figure out, like, you know, all of the memos that they have to write every time, you know, they have to make a phone call, every time they ask for a postponement, they're charging you. And so who is actually putting the bill for Aaron Dean to be getting all these postponements? I mean, really, is it the POA? Is it another organization? Because I don't know what he's doing for a living right now, but I'm quite sure it's not something that can pay for this type of delays and this type of postponements. And so I'm just questioning, like, what the heck is going on? I mean, because I just feel like, you know, they're denying justice at this particular point, because if it were you or me, we would not be allowed to continue to get postponement. You know, I think there's a such thing as a person has the right to a speedy trial or whatever. They way past speedy on this one. I mean, so I'm really not getting that. I'm not
right.
Sure, but yeah, it's just me. But I want to get some clarity on that story as to what the judge decided to do. And then have we crossed the hurdle of there will not be a change of venue? Has that been clarified yet? Do we know, yes or no, if it is going to stay in Tarrant County? And do we know whether or not, again, this delay will be approved by the judge? Because I think at some point, it seems to me, they're trying to do everything they can to upset the people and get the people in the street. And I'm hoping that people are smart enough not to take the bait, so that then in turn he can say he can't get a fair to safe trial here, so he needs to move it. And it almost seems like that's got to be the, you know, the game plan, because in any real court in this country, this trial would have already gone to court by now. It's just simple as that. It just I don't get
and
it.
And I think that's one reason they pushed the George Floyd trial so fast. That was a speedy trial, because that cop right. didn't stay. Most people stay, you know, they stay under stuff for years. But you saw how fast they pushed that through. And like you say, Minneapolis or Minnesota or whatever, it was, they mm-hmm. was basically on the verge of turn that city up. You remember, they had already got pulled the police back. So they pulled law enforcement back under the name of, well, y'all say defund the police. So y'all, they decided we're going to pull law enforcement back. And basically the people were free to just tear up and do whatever. But they pushed that trial through. That trial went through. That was a speedy trial right there. That was a, considering, you know, everything that took place and the national attention they got.
I think what happens, though, is a lot of times a lot of people are making the mistake of doing the civil trial before they do the criminal trial, and it seems like once they give you a substantial amount of money,
right.
then all of a sudden they want you to have a gag order on what you're going to say moving forward. So therefore we give you $17 million. So we just expect that you just, you know, stop talking about it and don't hype the crowd up when they want to talk about it. So that
gotcha.
Seems like one of the little tricks that they play. Another thing, y'all, we want to talk about is what's going on in Tarrant County Jail. I mean, I don't get it. There has been what I understand to be 40 deaths since 2016. That's a lot of people dying. That's a lot of folks dying. And so what really is happening that, you know, and I'm going to say this, and I started not to at first. Yeah, I used to work there years and years ago. And I worked there a year and a half. It was not my kind of job in the sense of the stress that was associated with it, because I was much younger then. and it was just like way more than I wanted to deal with, and I didn't understand the whole dynamics of it. And so it was something that kind of I was fearful of back then. And so, but I did a year and a half. And one thing I did know, though, and this was under a different chair, nobody died. I mean, because we were such a tight crew, the same people worked together most of the time, and we understood what we were supposed to be doing. And so when we all came on the floor every morning, we wanted to know where every inmate was. We wanted to know, you know, who needed to go to the doctor, you know, who had a court appointment, who needed to see the chaplain. All of those things were understood, and we followed the protocol. And, you know, we logged everybody on. We logged everybody off the floor. We did tank checks on a regular basis. So we understood where every inmate was at all times, is my point. And so I'm just questioning, like, are they not doing the tank checks on time? Because a tank check is something that's supposed to be done on an hourly basis. You know, if they did the tank check at 7:07 a.m., then 8:07 a.m., the next tank check was supposed to happen. And at 9:07 a.m., the next tank check was supposed to happen. And so in those tank checks, you were supposed to be doing a visual inspection of the tank itself and the inmate. And you were supposed to be looking for things like, you know, did somebody look like they were beat up? You know, did somebody look like they were sick and needed to see, you know, the nurse? You know, all those types of things. And then the officers were taking up kites, you know, and those were requests that the inmates were making, trying to determine what are they saying needs to be going on, because sometimes an inmate be telling you what's going on in the tank. Another, you know, maybe telling you he needs to go see the nurse or whatever. And so I just question, Adrian, from my own experience, at that same jail, something's very off with what's going on, because, you know, in the year and a half that I worked there, no one ever died. No one, you know. And the worst thing I think that
I was just thinking about what you're speaking in reference to the deaths. My question is, because these people, regardless of their criminal convictions and them being locked up, these, they are still people, you know, they're still somebody's son, daughter, brother, you know, so on and so forth. My question is, why haven't we heard from the, and somebody said, well, how is that possible? You know, people die every day, but why haven't we heard from any of the families, you know, regarding people, you know, my loved one dying in this facility, or is it just, people just looked the other way because they are inmates? This is just something, well, they were in trouble, so I guess that's just the way it is. You get in trouble, this, that, or the other. So I would like to know, maybe we could find out something, try to get in contact with somebody who's lost someone during the course of the time you spoke of, and see what it is that they had to say regarding it. I mean, as far as what they've heard, or, you know, what they know to be the factor for them dying, you know, because like you said, it's happening for a reason, you know.
Something's going on. We're going to go back to the phone line. 817-446, you're up again. Good evening.
Oh, am I back on there, Carrie?
You are.
Is that me? Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Okay, yay. Sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. I got into something I was answering about that. My sign got taken down by a neighborhood association, and she just emailed me a while ago and said it's in her driveway and come get it. But I'm not going to come get it. I'm emailing her back that I'm going to take her to court. She owes me $140. She didn't have the right to take it down. It's taken down private property. And she didn't have the right, so. But anyway, I got involved. I'm sorry to get off. I was listening to what y'all were talking about, the jails and the things there, you know. Mm-hmm. There was some more things, though, on the guys of the book, so that's what I liked a lot, too. I'd like to, Karen, to get that book out. You know, I wouldn't mind advertising it for them on our show, and next time we start back on the air there with Local Voter Education, to have them either come on to plug their book, and, you know, have them come on your show, or do a commercial for them, plug it on there, and I'll plug it for free to help them get it out there and get the word out. And they were talking about meetings. Well, I got that one at Martin Luther King, so I'd like to get in touch with them if we can and see if they might want to make appearance at that POA meeting. You know, I've got a lot of people involved coming to that meeting. It's all about police and everything. It might be a good place for them just to kind of be and meet and greet a little bit before the meeting, and might be. But anyway, that's something to discuss. But Jeez, I had something I was going to say. I just lost it again. I got to get some brain power somewhere or some.
I will give them your information. I don't know if that particular meeting would be a great place for them to come to because this is like a conflict maybe. But to
not really
come to the show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not really a talk, but they could set up maybe a booth over the side with their book. You know what I mean? Like they do and just be there because of the crowd. To get acknowledgement, but if not, no problem. You know, it's just it's off in the air, throwing it all over. You know, just see what, and if it helps out, then great. That's good. But I had something go out along the conversation here, and it just sprouted wings and flew away. Maybe it'll come back in a minute here on me. Go ahead.
Well, let me tell everybody what you're talking about with the signs. Bob put up some signs against a certain candidate that's running in District 4. Basically, if I'm understanding correctly, the signs were, what does the sign say exactly?
Oh, you brought back what I was going to say. That's it. I was listening to y'all talking about where the money comes for the lawyers, all those six lawyers for Dean's trial. And I was listening to y'all talk about it, how does he get the money and all that costs money and that. And I was there thinking, well, if I get back on, I'm going to say, well, maybe the POA puts a lot of that in there, but you done beat me to it. You said that. You said, well, maybe the POA. So I'm thinking the POA contributes that to there. But the sign, that's what the sign's about. The sign doesn't say any candidate's name, but it does say it's a big 5-foot by 10-foot sign. I've got another one up right now. And this one here she took down. And she had no right to take it down. She's a neighborhood association. And I've already got clearance for code compliance. So apparently I got code because I call codes. Well, I go straight to the director. I don't deal with anybody but the director. And that's the very top with those crooks. But anyway, I left word over there. They didn't contact me if there's anything wrong with the sign. So, but what the sign says is that we need, well, it's got a picture of the police car. Maybe y'all might have seen it before on webs on Facebook. But it's got the picture of the police car on about a quarter of the sign. And the other three-quarter sign says in big letters, we need the police to stop paying POA dues. Stop paying millions in POA dues until the POA stops buying candidates. Thank you. And I'm very upset with the POA undermining our elections. They put my name on something and mailed it out and said, you know, didn't do interviews. They're about as crooked as can be. But nevertheless, that's what she took down. And now she just sent me an email here. And it says, I have your sign. You can come get it if you don't put it up anymore. She's saying, do not put any more signs in Brentwood Oak Hills. Like she owns the city here. Well, she doesn't own the city. So, but anyway, I'm glad she's... Well, she's giving me all the documents here to take her to court easily for this one because she took away.
You know what? I really was thinking that it was really bad for them to buy candidates or as you say, buy candidates.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I think that they may be spending God knows how much money defending an officer who's clearly guilty of shooting an innocent woman in her own home in the middle of the night while she was playing video games, that's really becoming disturbing because, I mean, it's very clear that somebody is financing his defense. And so now this is the problem. Y'all, this is where I struggle. If the city of Fort Worth says that they were going to fire this officer before he quit, you know, if he hadn't quit, they were going to fire him. If they were going to fire him because what he did was obviously wrong, then why would the POA then be trying to finance the defense for this person and help him get off? So is the city pulling their leg or something's not adding up here? Or I don't know how
Carrie,
the POA.
Carrie, we do need to confirm first that the POA does have money in there. I don't have. Do you have any confirmance of that or anything? I mean, you mentioned it. I'm somewhat I'm a thinking too, but I don't have any documents to say that yet.
I
that's the
and
first
you know,
thing I think we need some kind of documents first, and then we're on track.
Well, I don't think we're going to be able to get somebody to give us that information. You know, I don't think there's.
I can't get them to give me any information.
I don't think Jim Lane's going to tell you how he's getting paid. I don't think so. Somebody said maybe prompters are paying him, paying for his defense. I don't know if I believe that, but it's possible. But I just think, you know, our country is going in the wrong direction when it's okay for somebody to lose their life when they didn't deserve it, they didn't do anything. And so if we're trying to keep a person who did that out of jail, this country's going in the wrong direction. If we feel like that he should get off because, oops, he made a mistake, but you can't bring her back. So somebody's got to pay for that. It's just not right that we are, as a country, have people in here that feel like he should get off because he made a mistake. No, he didn't follow protocol. He was not supposed to pass two doors and go to the backyard. That just wasn't supposed to happen. And so had he just followed his training, then he would have never been led to the backyard. He would have been led to the front door that was open, and he could have called the police and identified himself and had an intelligent conversation with a very intelligent young woman. Okay. Is that your noise in your background, Bob?
No, I think that might
and
be.
Carrie, I think another thing, like you say, regarding the situation, like you say, Mr. Smith has stated, the front door is open. Yes. Most police announce themselves.
Yeah.
You know, but my thing is, go back to the situation. Why didn't you announce yourself? When that front door was open, why did you knock? Police, that's training. You are a rogue, and I'm gonna say that you are rogue. You feel some type of way. You feel like you feeling something. He was feeling something that night. You rogue. You're rogue and reckless, and you need to be treated as such and dealt with as such. You know, same thing like with Mr. Bolton and John. That forget that overtime, man. Miss, that wasn't the first time you done overtime. That was my argument with that case. So I did overtime. I'm sure that wasn't the first time you done overtime. So mention with that, you were caught up in la-la land with the other guy you was fooling with within the division. You was caught up in that. She wasn't focused on getting home. So, go ahead. I'm sorry, Carrie.
I just think we got to stop sending this wrong message that you can have a gun, do what you want to do with your gun, and then when, you know, things don't go so well, then all of a sudden you get this, all of this sympathy because, oops, you made a mistake. But somebody lost their life. And so if I took someone's life because I was reckless with a gun, I don't get that type of mercy. I don't get to stay out of jail 3 years. I don't get a chance, you know, to have six attorneys working on my defense. I don't get a chance to, you know, have people fighting to get me off of something that I clearly shouldn't have done. And so that's just right. Where I'm at. Something's very wrong. Okay, we're going back to the phone line, 314-381. Good evening, Pianki. How you doing?
Say, isn't that the case where the neighbor looked across the street and seen the door open and called the police?
Yes, the neighbors are listening, a member of our audience. So, yes, it is. Would you like to speak to
them? No, I don't. I just wanted to – I think I had made a comment about this some time ago and included you in it, but I just wondering. Thank you.
Okay. So the thing is, though, you know, in life, though, we got to realize there's as my mother always says to me, something, choices and consequences. She always says it's choices and consequences. And one thing I realized when I graduated from high school and walked across that stage and got the diploma, I realized that life got real. All of a sudden, there was bills and other stuff that did start piling up because all of a sudden, to the world, I was an adult. And so I had, again, choices and consequences at that particular point, and no longer could I say that my mother and my father were the reason, you know, that I couldn't hide behind them anymore. And so I just think in this country, we got to stop allowing people to do stuff that we know is wrong, and then we try to, for some reason, get them off. It's sending the wrong message to our kids. That's what I think. I think we got to be careful. We're sending the wrong message to the kids that you can be irresponsible, you can be reckless, you can just kill somebody, and then you have no consequences behind it. Something's got to get in. And I know that was a rant, y'all. But I feel passionately about that thing, that we got to stop. I mean, because our kids are picking up guns and they're killing each other, and they're getting this stuff from us. You know, and we just got to do something different. That's what do they say? The definition of insanity is to do the same thing over and over and expect a different outcome. That's insanity. You know, but that's just how I feel about that, y'all. I'm just kind of passionate about that. Forgive me. Something else we wanted to talk about, y'all. Again, early voting started, May 20th. I'm calling all kind of months. April 25th, and election day is May 7th. Y'all, we know all these proposals are on the table. We got to get it right. I'm not telling you what to vote for or how to vote, but we did a show on it, and we broke down all of the propositions that need to pay attention to, and we ask that you at least go back and listen to that show, because, Adrian, we did a good job that night breaking down those propositions. We really did.
Yes. You went through pretty much everything that they had presented to us, but people have to be mindful that which they spend the most time on. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You got to realize they heavily invested in these things. They took time out. Like Bob said, they never advertise or encourage people to get out and vote. But when it's something that's going to benefit certain individuals, or, you know, I always say we got to start following this money trail. They took time out to have these various town hall meetings, you know, whatever, to try to see. They go to certain areas because they know who's voting. They know the people that's for law enforcement. They know the people who's for what they're doing. They're not going to areas they know they're going to get some kickback, you know. And like I say, we never say we're against law enforcement, but you got to throw law enforcement in there, because everything that's within these proposals or the bond or the amendments, it's something with law enforcement. So when we're speaking to the whole of our government, but they took time out to try to have these various meetings in various locations, it's something to that. They don't spend energy and time on everything doing it. They didn't spend that energy time doing that for the redistricting. You know, they told people they can draw their own maps, but like you say, the council, it seemed like the council member maps got more favorable treatment than the citizens. First, see, they try to make it appear like they want to give us something, and then they take it back. We're going to get the citizens involved, then we take it back. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm pretty sure all the maps that were submitted, I'm pretty sure we got some very knowledgeable citizens, some people who see things from a broader perspective, that probably submitted maps that would have trumped any of those council members' maps. I think the city council is too involved in certain things. I don't think they need to be pointing themselves to various boards. They are in too many aspects of our government. You know what I'm saying? And it's like when you get elected as a council member, I think that's how they woo you in. They say, hey, we're going to put what's name on this board, and they vote him into this board. We're going to put her on this board, and they vote him in. But really, what is that doing? You know what I'm saying? Same thing with law enforcement. They sit on that board. All these various boards the council members sit on. And then if you look at the last vote, the most recent vote, Kerry, regarding the law enforcement receiving more money, they said, no, this is not more money. This is just – they threw that in there at the council meeting. They said, this is not no more money. This is just money we've already allocated through the CCPD. We're just reworking. And some of some hogwash they were saying. But if you notice, Beck, and I'm calling them out, Beck. Mm-hmm. Oh, this time Gina had a vote. Did you believe Gina voted this time? She didn't. Gina didn't. But the people who had the highest talking points were Gina, Williams, and Nettles. And you listen to the things they said. I don't discount what they were saying as being factual. But the black faces were the ones who, quote unquote, were the ones who had the issues with the quote unquote. You know what I'm saying? They had issues or concerns, and then they had to go into the spiel of why they had issues or concerns. Nobody else on that panel said anything in regards to that. And I said, man, that's crazy. That's crazy. So y'all let this POA, y'all let this fear, whatever, I'm calling it what it is. They let this, they got them. I told you. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was sitting, I said, oh, they got them. They got Beck. Oh, they got Williams. They got them. And I wait for Chris. Chris said what he had to say. I said, damn, they got Chris, too.
Or were they
because
fearful?
You could have seen. Huh?
Or were they fearful because of what Manny did last time?
You know what? Yes, I would say so. Mm-hmm. I would say so. Because you could have voted. They could have voted the same way, and it still would have got passed. Because Moon, Crane, old girl in the middle, Moon, Crane, Flores, old girl in the middle, Finchie. We know he's just there. Firestone, I mean, Firestone is just there. He's just there. Firestone don't say much. It was going to get voted on regardless in Bivens. I was you abstained last time, Bivens. Now all of a sudden you got something to say? See, that's what I'm paying attention to. Huh?
What vote are you referring to?
What say it again, Carrie?
What vote are you referring to?
The vote with the Bobcat. That's the one she abstained from, remember? The dealing with the Bobcat. Gina, the only one, she abstained from that vote. You know, Carrie, I mean, she abstained from the vote. Chris, Nettles, and Beck, they voted no. And the other five voted yes. So that's, you know, that's how it got passed. Remember, she abstained from it. She didn't vote on it, remember?
But there was a recent vote that they had dealing with something the other day. Remember, it was involving the 12-year contract.
That one she voted on. Yeah.
They unanimously, that
one
she
voted.
Right. Mm-hmm. That was the other day, y'all. That was just the last council meeting. That 12-year contract for more cameras, more holsters, more tasers, and what is it? License plate readers from Axon Enterprise. Yeah.
And look, Carrie, when you go to these council meetings, those people, see, the chief, he makes his presence known. See, the POA runs the department. And the chief is, you know, what's the name of fire him? Old boy. He can fire the chief, so the chief's got to get. He gonna stand step and toe with it, because old boy can pull his card any time. But Carrie, they were lined up against that back wall like they knew they got it. Representatives from the company were lined up against that back wall, Carrie. They were lined up against that back wall, standing up with their hands like, yes, they were lined up against that back wall. They filled that whole entire back wall, those representatives from their company. The chief came down after Thomas had his say and I had my say. Then here comes the chief, because they know it's going to be some kickback. But we were the only two voices in there that was, you know what I'm saying, that was saying what we were saying, you know what I'm saying? But them people stood at that back wall.
If I was getting $74 million, I'd have showed up too. $74 million. I mean, where else would you want to be than a place where they're about to give you $74 million? I'm just saying, it was crazy.
And Carrie, you know, another thing that factors into this, they can blame it on the governor, but the governor kind of, I think he got something to do with a lot of this, because remember the governor made the threat he made. I'm sorry, a threat is a threat. If I make a threat against anybody, it's going to be considered a terroristic threat. Guess what? That's a criminal offense. That's going to be on me. You know what I'm saying? The governor made a threat to all the mayors of the cities. Y'all defund. If y'all try to take anything away from law enforcement, I'm going to take money away from y'all. This, that, or the other. Manny Ramirez made a threat, whether directly or indirectly, to three of our council members. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's a criminal offense. So what's up with that? Why is it right for it's right for some? It's not right for, you know, it's not right for all. I digress.
No. And I'm agreeing with you totally. That is just like, we're just spending money, y'all, like crazy. And I'm just going to say something, and this is, you know, you might not think it's connected, but trust me, it is. I grew up in Memphis, and the other day, the city of Memphis employees went to cash their checks at their bank, and the checks were not good, at least when they first went. Now, you would think the city would have the money in the bank to pay folks their payroll checks. But some kind of situation went down, and they were not immediately able to cash their checks as they normally do. And I'm saying that to say, y'all, we can keep writing all these checks that we want to, but they're going to start bouncing in a minute. You can't say, you know, $56 million here, $37 million there, $27 million here, and all that stuff. It's got to be a check and a balance. And then at some point, something's going to crash if we are just naively writing checks because somebody is not paying attention to the books. That's just my opinion. Y'all just think about it. If it happened in one city, and I've done a show years ago, and I may go back and pull it out of a city where they went bankrupt. The people literally went to get their checks at the first of the month, and they were not there anymore. And so it can happen. Don't be fooled. Fort Worth is not too big to have find themselves in the same situation. So somebody needs to be a good steward of the money, because eventually, if you're not, the money will run out. So just FYI, when we're going to the polls on these all these proposals where they're asking for all this money, this $560 million, you might need to pick and choose what you agree to, because at some point, ultimately, we the taxpayers have got to foot the bill. And so, you know, I know they're writing checks like it's monopoly money, but it's coming out of our tax people. You know, that's just really
right.
What it is. But I want to ask Bob something while he's still on the phone. Bob, tell us about the redistricting map. It takes Bob to talk about the redistricting map before we get out of here. Bob, can you break down what you saw in the redistricting map?
That scam? That holy scam there. I mean, that is something, isn't it? How they got those islands on there. If anybody's looked at it closely, like District 6 has a little blue island up, and then District 11 has another one, which someone else pointed that out to me. And I think Adrian might have pointed out 6. I'm not sure. And 11 was pointed out by my neighbor. I was showing 6 to him, and he got to look and said, well, look here at 11. They got an island too. And I said, oh, wow, I didn't see that one. And that thing is so – but I'll tell you what. When they started the digitizing, same thing with the bond and everything else, the very beginning meetings, when they're lying to you in the beginning, that's when I jumped off. I'm not playing that game. There's no sense going on or draw the lines and all that, because they're not being honest all the way. They're lying in the very beginning. They lied 100% left and right. I got so much video of Mayor Price and him saying, everybody has to be included. This is important. All the people out there need to know. What bull. I mean, and then in the end, the council members take it away, and they do the drawing themselves, like a bunch of kids up there crying and fighting over it. And I don't know. But anyway, I've got my ad coming out in the weekly. This weekly Wednesday's ad is going to have that picture of that in there, and it's also has Hancock's number in there to call Kelly Hancock, our senator, my representative here. Anyway, everybody can call him. And what it is, he can't do anything about the redistricting, but the DA, the attorney general, can. Ken Paxson, he has the power to step in and stop this, because it's got racial gerrymandering, it's got all kind in it, but he has the power to. But you can't invoke the attorney general. The way I understand, your representative has to invoke him. So I've been at Ken Paxson saying, all I want you to do is here's this. This is what we see. It's wrong. It's been taken out of our hands. It's not been done, you know, and plus, the people that benefit this map drawing should not be the ones that draw, the ones that have self-beneficiary, and should not be the ones drawing the map above all. You know, not anybody has any beneficiary for that map should be the ones drawing it. And they all drew it for themselves. You know, but anyway, we'll see you on the paper.
Can I say something? Today, y'all, and by the way, my cell phone number is not public to my knowledge because I don't give it out. Today, I got a message, and the message was, well, I saw the call coming in, but I was finishing the research for this show, so I didn't stop and answer it because it came in from a, what do you call it, a private number, and I don't answer private numbers, by the way. So if y'all want to call me on a private number, you're never going to get me. And so anyway, this person who never identified themselves, but they appear to be a Caucasian, white, maybe older female, she was talking about Bob Willoughby and how I needed to tell Bob Willoughby this and tell Bob Willoughby that. Listen, Bob Willoughby's number is everywhere. So Bob Willoughby can take his own call. Bob Willoughby can take his own call. But this person was telling me to go back and watch certain videos. She was telling me all these people that I needed to put it on Instagram and I needed to do this and I tell Bob Willoughby that and this. And I thought, what? You know, so FYI, Bob Willoughby's number is very public and very accessible to most people who want to get it. Bob, maybe you ought to put it on your Facebook page.
I'll give it to you now, if you like.
Okay,
I'll give it to you now.
Yeah, this lady, listen to this. Jerry Lewis used to say it like this. Lady, Bob's going to give you his number so you can call him.
You know, it's funny. They won't talk to me directly.
I'll
you know, that's funny. Why don't they come up and talk? My number is 817-446-7056. If a woman answers, hang up. No.
Okay.
Anyway, that's my number, and you're welcome to call 24 hours a day because I don't answer it during the nighttime. I keep it away from me so I don't have to hear it, so you're not going to bother me there. But anyway, that number's out there. It's in the paper. It'll be in the paper Wednesday. And also, while it's out there, was this girl good looking or anything?
Well,
no, I'm sorry.
Called
Go ahead.
She called me from a private number, and I really don't know how she got access to my number. That,
no,
so
that's funny.
Whenever,
that is funny.
Yeah, when somebody calls me from a private number and they don't identify themselves and they leave me like a 4-minute message and they're giving all these instructions but they don't remember to tell me how to reach them or what their name is. Yeah, and that I need to pass on this and pass on that to Bob Willoughby. I thought, you know what I said, y'all, the city is messing with me. I said, you know what?
I just wish people would come. You know, I'm here. I'm out front. Come get me. If I've done something wrong, please bring it out and let's discuss it. We'll do it openly, okay? If I know anything.
Yeah,
of course,
yeah,
I've done a lot. I hope everybody don't hear that. No, I'm just kidding.
Y'all go get Bob. Yeah, we got to get ready to get out of here. Listen, thank you again to Patrick Hackett and Kelvin Spencer for coming through tonight and telling us all about their new book, What Really Happened in Operation Fishbowl. What Really Happened in Operation Fishbowl. Also, we want to thank you, the audience, for listening tonight. Listen, please consider advertising right here on Let's Talk Fort Worth. If you have a business, if you have a service, if you have a campaign that you're running, consider doing ads right here on Let's Talk Fort Worth. You can drop us a line at letstalkfortworth@aol.com. That's letstalkfortworth@aol.com. If you like what we do here and you would like to see us continue to do it, listen, y'all, it takes a lot of work to get these shows done and to get these subject matters right. So listen, consider donating to the show. We got a Cash App. You can Cash App us at, what is it called? PayPal.me/Let's Talk Fort Worth. That's PayPal.me/Let's Talk Fort Worth. I think that's it, y'all. Listen, early voting started April 25th. Election day is May 7th. Be sure to get out and go vote. Remember that. Get out and go vote. And y'all listen, the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage, the host, or our advertisers. With that said, y'all listen, we're going to get out of here. We'll see you next week, the same time, same bad channel. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.